Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Run to Daylight Football Funcast with your host, Todd Burrows.
Welcome to the latest installment of the Run to Daylight podcast. I'm your host, Todd Burrows. That's Todd with one D from PA on Twitter. That's where you can find me. And we're going back and we're going to dig a little deeper into a subject that I did last week with Seth FFL. And that is something that I think if you're an addictive personality and a fan of fantasy football, you are probably doing what I and this next guest are doing a lot of, which is MFL 10s or best ball leagues. I'm very happy to have on the show Mike Beers. You can find him on Twitter at Beerswater. I think that's right. Mike, hello. How you doing? Welcome to the show.
Hi, I'm doing great. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to dig in.
Yeah, me too. I've wanted to have you on for a while. I noticed that you've really kind of taken off in the little community that is the fantasy football so-called experts. Some are experts and a lot of us want to be, and you're kind of in the middle at this point. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, where you, first of all, did I get your Twitter handle right?
Yes, that's right. Beers, B-E-E-R-S, water. And that's it.
So how much shit have you taken in your life for your name? Oops, I'm not supposed to curse on this show. But I just had to ask you, I mean, with a name like Beers, like, can you take us through, like, the three stages of getting picked on from that name? Like, when you're young, when you're a teenager, and now that you're a little bit older? Or you know, did you just grow up in a different generation than me where no one really picked on you for it?
Well, actually, the thing is, I wasn't picked on for it. It was more of an advantage. When you're younger, high school or middle school or whatever, everyone thought it was cool. Beers was just my nickname. You know, it wasn't something people made fun of me for. And then it was even more exciting for the guys in the basement of a frat house in college that my name was Beers.
So with a name like Beers, you know, so do you embrace it and become a big beer drinker, or, you know, do you kind of go the other way, or do you just like pretty much anything with an alcohol content?
Well, I'm not a huge drinker, but I think it doesn't have a lot to do with the name. I've just gravitated toward, whatever tastes good.
Well, you know, what's interesting is you're a young guy and you mentioned you have a family. Why don't you take us through a little bit of your life, where you grew up, where you live now, when you got married, kids, that sort of thing, just to give everyone a little bit of taste of what it's like to be Mike.
Sure. I'm 31 years old, and I have been married as of tomorrow for 7 years to my wife. We have three kids, all boys. I have identical twin boys, as well as one who's a little bit older than the guys. And, you know, I live in Connecticut now. I grew up in Maryland. And the past, 8 years or so after college, I was working in finance. So I was an investment analyst, and I worked primarily for a fund of hedge funds, which my job was to research hedge fund managers and decide who were the good ones and who weren't, and hopefully invest with the better ones. It was a really interesting job, and there was a lot of, you know, sort of work with data and analytics and stuff that I've transferred over to the fantasy football world.
Do you still work in finance? Do you have a 9-to-5, or is this kind of your gig now?
Well, neither, really. I left my last job in the summer last year, and I've been spending my time. I do part-time sort of consulting work with a couple of people I've worked with on finance-related stuff or software programming stuff, and I'm spending my time trying to figure out the software programming side of things and transitioning over to tech from finance. So I'm probably leaving finance behind.
Gotcha. Well, I don't want to take the show down too much of a rabbit hole, but since you mentioned finance and hedge funds, any comments or thoughts on what transpired this week with Preet Bharara getting fired by the administration? Did you have any, were you aware of him when you were in finance? And just curious on your a quick take on that, perhaps.
I guess I don't really have a take on that. It wasn't really something I was keeping tabs on. So
no worries. No worries.
Yeah.
I just thought it was interesting when you mentioned that because I didn't know. All right. So let's get one last thing. Why don't you tell people where they can find your information and, your progress with fantasy football?
Sure. A lot of the stuff I do, I just put directly on Twitter. So again, the handle is @beerswater. And in particular, a lot of the sort of visuals and data stuff I put on there, you can find at #chartsoncharts. I put up a lot of, shockingly, it's a lot of charts you'll find there if you click on that hashtag. But
absolutely.
And then I've also written a few articles for RotoViz. So you can find me there. I think a handful of articles over the past couple of years.
Yeah, I love RotoViz. I think it's the best value in fantasy football. I call it the smart kids table. a lot of what is now considered the norm in fantasy football as it relates to analytics, from what I've heard from Fantasy Douche on his Twitter feed, at one point everyone thought he was just a nerd with a bunch of nerds, and now pretty much everything is accepted. So it's interesting how people's minds can change over such a short period of time.
Oh, yeah, and it's a great site, and I love, getting a little window into, being just a part-time, every once in a while, contributor for them. I get access to some very smart people, and using their tools is always great. I mean, they've got a great package of tools at RotoViz.
Yep, it's the best deal in fantasy football. It's $30 for the year for the NFL. Do you have a code? If you have a code, we might as well throw it out there. I recommend the site highly. I wouldn't go into an off season without joining. But if anyone's listening, do you have a code from one of your things? Maybe you could get a little something having someone sign up.
So we don't have referral codes, but if someone were to sign up through one of my articles, so hopefully they'll read the article, and then if you subscribe from that page, then I do get a little cut. It's not my main source of income.
No, I wouldn't think it would be. But hey, you know what? You do good work. You deserve a little bit of a bump if you can get it. So how long have you been playing regular fantasy football? And when did you kind of discover this whole community on Twitter and take everything to the next level?
Yeah, so I've been playing fantasy football since, I think, about 2003, which I guess is a while ago now. That was just a league I started with my high school buddies. And, I played pretty casually for the next, 5 or 6 years. And then dove into it a little more, played more leagues, put a little bit of money on the line. I've never really played high stakes, but and then about 3 years ago was when I really got into, I started talking to people a lot more on Twitter about it, which led me to the MFL 10s, which I, I hadn't heard of until about 3 years ago. I didn't know anything about best ball either. And that's, I really sort of dove into it at that point. It was just very interesting. I liked that not many people really knew what worked really well. It was uncharted territory for a lot of people. And, that got me really interested in sort of, figuring out how to beat the game.
Yep, absolutely. So how do you think your approach is similar or different to some who are also heavily numbers-based with their analytical studying? And how does that tend to affect your approach to MFL 10s?
Well, I think one thing I do that's it's a little different from more of the data-intensive people is I'm not – projecting points or projecting players and, making rankings from complicated models or anything like that. I honestly don't even have my own player rankings. I'm looking at ADP. I'm looking at, some of the to the best writers out there. I look at their rankings, the people who do have those models. But where my, analytics and numbers stuff comes in is in the really in the roster construction, in finding the pockets of value in ADP, treating it more like a market, looking at rising and falling values of players rather than trying to figure out, who's number 5 versus number 10 and so on.
Okay, that's cool. All right. I'm sorry. I got a little distracted. I was actually sending you a little note. And that approach is similar to mine in a sense. I don't know that I'm as analytical about it as you are, but there's definitely trends that you notice when you start doing these drafts. You go in with certain assumptions, and then what ends up happening is you see what the ADP is doing and what's going on in drafts, and if you're a smart person, you adjust to that. And that I heard you mention something similar to that in a pod that I heard you do recently, and that's what spurred me to want to kind of go into this a little deeper. So, but everyone knows you for hyperfragility, which you came up with last season, which quickly gained a lot of positive feedback from a lot of smart people in the industry. Can you explain to the audience what hyperfragility is, how you came up with it, and how your win rate last year was using hyperfragility versus the rest of your MFL 10s?
Sure. I'll try not to go into too much detail because it'll get boring. But the idea with hyperfragility was that last year, after a disastrous year in 2015 for all the best running backs seemed across the board, people were shying away from running back early in drafts. It was happening all summer. It looked like, for the first time to me, you could get 3 of the top 12 or 15 running backs in the first 3 rounds, whereas in the past, at most you could get 2 of them. They were just flying off the board. And I wanted to take advantage of that opportunity. So the idea of hyperfragility was to get 3 of those running backs and then not take any more after that. And because they were 3 guys from the early rounds who were supposed to be very good if they didn't get injured, you'd score enough points just from those 3 and you could build up the rest of your roster with a lot of wide receivers and, and if the team – not the team, if the running back stayed healthy, even just 2 out of 3 of them, you had a very good shot of winning your league. And that's where the hyper-fragility part or the fragility part comes in. If you did lose 2 of your running backs, which happened on several teams, you were done. So it was sort of a swing for the fences kind of strategy.
It's interesting because, when I first heard about hyper-fragility, it gave me like hives all up and down my arms, right? The thought of only having 3 running backs. But the more I thought about it, I kind of warmed to the idea, even though I didn't do it. And what I liked most about it was taking advantage about what the market was showing you at the time.
Right. And, you know, when I started doing the work that led to hyperfragility, I wasn't expecting to come out the other side with that conclusion. I, you know, being a writer for RotoViz, I very much bought into, the zero RB idea, and I didn't expect to say, yeah, you got to get running backs early. Running backs are the most important. It's just what came out because of what everyone else was doing. And that's, I alluded to that earlier with, my focus being on ADP and, sort of the structure of the draft as opposed to, player projections and point projections. I'm going to adjust based on what everyone else is doing.
Yeah, I agree completely. I did a lot of that myself last year. I noticed that when I would get to the seventh, eighth, ninth round, if I was, I had adjusted and I was doing more wide receiver early, and I just noticed that there weren't guys that I wanted to take at running back in those rounds. And so I ended up doing more of a balanced approach last year. How did your hyperfragile lineups do versus the rest of your MFL 10s? Percentage-wise, was it a better percentage, the same, or a little bit worse?
It was slightly better. Unfortunately, I didn't have a great year last year in general. My return on investment was down about 20%. But the hyperfragile lineups, which were a small percentage of my total portfolio, because I didn't finish the work until about August, were about break even. And that was only, I think it was 10 or 11 drafts that were really hyper fragile. So I think, I had a first place and made a couple of second places there. And, so it wasn't, it wasn't a home run for me, but I heard of success from several other people who gave it a try themselves. And also looking at the success rates of all teams last year, I found that teams with only three running backs actually had the highest win rate of all the, sort of possible roster constructions. So that was pretty cool to see. I mean, that supported my idea.
Yep. Well, and again, sometimes the theory can be right and the results be wrong, based on, football with its injuries, that can happen, pretty easily. So, yep. I loved hyperfragility, the thought process behind it, and more importantly, why you did it. But now it's 2017. You have a reputation of being Mr. Hyperfragile. What are your thoughts on using that theory again this year? I know a lot of the zero running back guys feel like zero RB is the way to go no matter what. What's your thoughts when it comes to hyperfragility?
So I think I really have to wait until I see where the market sort of settles this year before I can decide that, it's like the way to go or not. Because as I mentioned before, coming up with the idea was very much driven by the market. I was led to that conclusion. But I have found in the earlier drafts this year, if you have an early pick, one of the three or four or five, and you get one of those top three running backs, it's very much in play. You can definitely, if you start with a Le'Veon Bell or David Johnson and get two running backs at the second round, third round turn, you can go this route. You have three very strong guys. I've given it a try in a couple of my drafts so far. I've only done 11 of them. But, I'd say I can't tell you it's the way to go this year, but I wouldn't rule it out either.
It's funny. They've only been open a week and a half. And both of us are like, yeah, I've only done 11, and I've only done
yeah.
It just goes to show the level of intensity that we and some other people put into these things so early in the season. With a year behind you on hyperfragility, as far as your thought process, have you thought about maybe being a little less hyperfragile and adding a fourth running back? And if not, what's the downside of adding a fourth round running back? A fourth running back.
Yeah, I got asked that a lot last year. People would say, well, what's the harm in grabbing some insurance in the 15th round or something instead of that ninth wide receiver? And I think, it doesn't really work for me because, generally speaking, if one of those top three guys that you got goes down and or two of them go down and you need that fourth running back, then you're probably not going to win anyway. And the idea was with that ninth wide receiver or that third quarterback that you're taking in the later rounds instead of a fourth running back, you were building up this sort of baseline, a higher average outcome for the rest of your positions, even if you didn't get them all exactly right. And then your running backs could do the heavy lifting on top of that. And I think the opportunity cost wasn't justified.
Yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense to me. And, either you're doing it or you're not. Because the whole point behind hyperfragility is if those three guys stay healthy and kill it in, two out of 10 leagues, you're going to win. Because the thing about MFL 10s historically, unlike some other ways of playing fantasy football, is you're really going to try and win. And as nice as it is to look and see that you're in third place or fourth place with a couple weeks to go, really, it comes down to winning these things.
Absolutely. And, when I wrote the article on hyperfragility, my conclusion at the end was, a 20% win rate was attainable. That is a great result. It's doubling your money in MFL 10s, 100% return. But, I was really excited about a strategy that only wins 2 out of 10 times. You kind of have to accept that when you go into one of these drafts. There are 11 other teams. They're probably pretty smart people, and there's a good chance you won't win. And you're just trying to employ a strategy that overall is going to get you there.
Yep, I think that's a very good point. Last question on hyperfragility, and I'm glad we got a little deeper into it than I thought we would, but it is kind of what you're known for. Last question I have on it is, let's say you want to go hyperfragile, and you get the running back you like in the first round. In the second and third round, how much value are you willing or not willing to give up to take a running back? Meaning, there's three kind of scenarios you run into. There's one where, your running back would have been your guy anyway. There's a scenario where they're about even, give or take a little bit. But sometimes, the running back is going to be a little, not significantly, because they're all second-round picks or third, but there's a drop-off in talent from a wide receiver or even a tight end. How much value are you willing or unwilling to forsake to do hyperfragility?
I'd say almost none. In that case, if a wide receiver looks like the better pick in the second round, I'm going to take a wide receiver, and then, I won't do the hyperfragile roster construction in that draft. And sort of the nice thing about, doing a lot of these is I know that I could do it next time or, the time after that. And I want to get the best players at the best cost, sort of across my portfolio. I would say, I might give up a small amount of value, or I might break a tie towards a running back if I know that there's going to be another good running back available the next round. Say we're at the end of the second round, and you know there are three guys I like, so I'm pretty sure I'll get a second or a third good running back around the turn. Then I might break the tie that way, knowing that I could go hyperfragile after that.
Yep, and I'm really glad I asked that question that way, because I think that's really important for people out there listening. If you're thinking for using hyperfragile, you just don't throw value out the window to do any system, is my thought. I know that some of the zero RB guys disagree with that, which I respect, but I'm glad that you answered it that way so that the people who listen understand when the guy who invented it, so to speak, uses or won't use the hyperfragile. So moving on, what are some of the key lessons you learned overall in doing a bunch of MFL-10s, and how are you adjusting your thought processes, and how are you tackling MFL-10s out of the gate this year?
So I mentioned that last year was, it wasn't the best year for me in terms of my results. And, one of the things that really drove that and was a big takeaway for me is that I had a pretty substantial exposure to Jamaal Charles last year, who was generally going in the second round. I've always liked him a lot. I believe in his talent. And, I thought a recovery from his injury was likely. And I thought he'd pay off the price. So I kept buying him. And I'd even sort of given myself or told myself, I didn't want to be too concentrated in anyone who was very expensive at the top of the draft. And I broke my own rule. So I'm not going to do that this year. And the idea is those expensive guys, they're higher risk. I put 30% of my, quote unquote portfolio on Jamaal Charles. And, that's just too much for an early round guy. I mean, that's fine for somebody in the double digit rounds, but, those are the guys that kill you. I mean, if one of your first picks goes down, it really is hard to recover. And we know every year, some of those high round picks are going to go down. So you want to be sort of spread out across them.
Yeah, especially since he was coming off an injury. I avoided all the, and I talked about this last week. I don't have a problem taking an injured guy, but I want the risk baked in, right? And in general, mm-hmm. a general rule for me is about a 2-round discount, right? So if Jamaal Charles, I think last year healthy, would have been a late first round pick, I don't want to take a lot of him until mid third round. And then in general, one of my rules is the first 2 rounds, I really don't want to go above 20%. I had a couple guys, I had Lamar Miller last year pushing 25%, because I really liked him and it just worked out that way. But in general, I think you made an excellent point, which is that rarely do you win a draft in the first 2 rounds, but you can lose them in the first 2 rounds, whether by injury or something else. And it just doesn't pay to have all your eggs in one basket. Wouldn't you agree?
Yep, I do agree. And I paid for it last year. It's definitely the risk and reward is skewed in the wrong direction, I think. I mean, they're all good players up in the first 2 rounds, and you're better off just getting exposure to each of them.
Yeah, well, look, we all live and learn. I know I continue to learn every day, and I certainly made my fair share of mistakes last year. It happens. But the MFL 10 season is now underway, and we have some ADP data to go on. Can you share some general early takes on things you're seeing in the marketplace?
Sure. I've mentioned I've done 11, or some of them are still in progress, but looking at ADP in my own drafts, one thing is pretty clear, that the top running backs are going earlier in general. I mean, certainly the first three, I have the top three spots in ADP right now, David Johnson, Le'Veon Bell, and Zeke. But even after that, you know, you've got a handful of running backs like Devonta, Melvin Gordon, who are going earlier than they would have last year when people were really favoring wide receivers. So that's been a bit of an adjustment. You know, I've had to account for that when planning the rest of the draft. And another thing I've noticed is in the later rounds, quarterbacks and tight ends seem to be going a little bit quicker. Not at the very beginning. So, you know, the first quarterback off the board is not early, but by the time we get to the 14th round, where last year I'd be happy taking my third quarterback, say, or even second quarterback sometimes, you know, it's really dried up. You know, if we take a look at who's available there now, we've got guys like, you know, Carson Wentz, Ryan Tannehill, and then, you know, Alex Smith, that I'm just not very excited about drafting. And whereas last year, I think, you know, there were some guys with more upside. Likewise at tight end, it's causing me to adjust where I take these players.
Yeah, I'm noticing exactly the same thing. And early on, without ADP to guide us, it's kind of hard to chart a course, and I feel like I end up at these cliffs, right? And then you look down, right, and there's no safe place to jump, and you're like, oh, man. But so what I think we'll do is we'll go through some of the peaks and valleys that I've noticed and kind of get your opinion on each one. Probably for me, the biggest peak and valley is in round one, where there's seven or eight guys who I don't mind taking it all. For me, it's eight. I don't mind any of the three running backs or the top five wide receivers. But once you get to the end of the eighth pick, it really, really is like a huge drop-off. How have you gotten any of drafts in that 9 to 12 range? And do you have a couple targets or a couple thoughts on how to deal with that ledge?
Yeah, so I've noticed exactly what you have. You know, I'm happy to take Mike Evans and A.J. Green after the sort of the big three running backs and big three wide receivers. But I've been trying to just spread it out if I have one of those last three picks. You know, more recently, I think, I think Melvin Gordon, I'm probably going to bump up a little bit in the first round. I might make him, you know, that number nine guy because of Woodhead going over to Baltimore. I think he's just got a more solidified role. But otherwise, I'm mostly picking wide receivers there. LeSean McCoy feels like a little bit of a reach. And I'm just spreading it around between those guys in the, you know, the wide receiver 6 to 9 range, not trying to go overboard on anybody.
Yeah, I think you're kind of saying what I'm saying. I'm not a big Melvin Gordon guy because he just isn't that great of a running back. And so much of his scoring was on runs inside the red zone. I mean, he had numbers that, you know, dwarfed everyone else. And if you listen to TJ Hernandez like I do, TDs tend to regress. So he makes me nervous. Devonta makes me nervous because Tevin Coleman is there still. And I think it's very possible that that offense, it's just rare. I mean, we saw it with Carolina the year before. You have an offense that's going great guns, and it's just not a guarantee that it happens again. So if that offense regresses a little and you've got Coleman there, I don't like that. So I love what you're saying about the wide receivers and splitting it up. I think that's a really good idea. The next kind of valley is, it's pretty unfortunate because if you are drafting late in the first, it means you're drafting late in the third. And again, it seems like running back thins dramatically. And some drafts, there's a guy or two you don't mind taking. And sometimes it's just not very good drafting, I'm finding, at the end of the third. Are you seeing the same thing?
Yeah, you know, end of the third is I feel like I'm going to end up with a lot of C.J. Anderson on my teams when I'm drafting in one of those late picks. And then, yeah, early fourth is where I get uncomfortable. He's sort of like the last of the group of guys that I kind of like. You know, then we get into the territory of, you know, Spencer Ware, Tevin Coleman, Rawls, Derrick Henry. You know, these
hold
are guys
on, got,
who.
Hold on, I got to go throw up. Okay, I'm back. Yeah,
I wasn't even done going through the list. Yeah.
Well, and even C.J. Anderson, I mean, I got busted on him 2 years in a row. So, and Booker's still there, and their offensive line. I mean, I don't have any C.J. Anderson shares yet. I've taken some Spencer Ware, but I believe you feel like there's some risk there as well.
Yeah, I'm not sure what they're going to do with the draft, or, you know, whether he's really the guy there, you know, and you know, certainly helps that Charles is officially gone, but you know, all the guys in that little group in the fourth and fifth rounds of ADP, you know, they're just question marks, or they're not even the number one guy on their team, like Derrick Henry or Tevin Coleman. You know, there's upside there, but it's not really the kind of investment I want to make in that round. One guy who's creeping up for me, at least, is Isaiah Crowell on Cleveland. You know, I wasn't drafting him at first. His price tag seemed too high, but you know, they seem to be, you know, making some changes to their offensive line, and he's actually, you know, Duke Johnson's there, but he's their early down running back, and I feel more comfortable about his role in that offense than I do about other guys who are going in that range.
And I think that that's a very reasonable spot. And he's, you know, again, it's like I've taken him once out of eight, and I you know, it's just what you just described. It's like, did I just really draft Isaiah Crowell in the early to mid fourth round? But
right.
He, out of all those guys, he seems to have a role that's defined. And with them improving their offensive line, and I think overall they're going to be a better team with all the picks they've got on the table. He's the one guy that I can't draft Derrick Henry with Murray there. I just can't. I can't, you know,
right.
Rawls, you got all the, you know, we won't go through it again, but the, you know, the one guy that's kind of interesting to me is Joe Mixon a little later. You know, I've been getting him in the mid fifth. You know, I think once I get to the mid fifth, end of the fifth round, I feel pretty good about his talent. And, you know, I'm not going to go crazy there, but he's the type of guy I think who could really give you a nice bump.
Yeah, and I think, at least for now, his price is in a pretty good range. Though I want to point out that my real answer to those rounds is I'm probably just not taking running backs there. You know, I'll look at the wide receivers who are coming off the board. You know, in the fourth round, there's some guys I really like. You know, like Michael Crabtree or, you know, Stephon Diggs, Golden Tate, some guys like that who I'd just much rather have than one of those high-risk running backs.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And it's all the more reason to me that I want to get in, you know, I almost don't want to play MFL 10s on the chance that I'm going to get a late pick. Because I feel like, you know, it's hard enough to beat 11, you know, 10, 11 other guys. And to have to do it with dips in the first and the third is, I feel like you're starting with one hand tied behind your back. But I'm doing the same thing. I've had at least one draft where I went four wide receivers. And I do think there's some pockets of value for running back in the 10th through the 13th round. Are you finding any guys there that you like as well?
There are, you know, I don't really have any favorites yet, but there's certainly a few guys I've gotten a few shares of. I'm not even sure where Woodhead is going right now, but I think I'm going to start buying him up. He's probably a little earlier than that. And then
him at 119.
119, right? Yeah. So that, you know, that's sort of the range you're talking about. And then a little later, you know, I'm really not finding many guys I love. You know, there's nobody I'm just really snapping
no,
up.
There's no love. There's no marriage, but, you know, there might be a couple one-night stand guys. I'll throw out a couple names of guys that I don't hate. I think Theo Riddick, his role should be secure. You can get him, you know, 6th to 8th round. Bilal Powell's another guy who I don't mind taking. LeGarrette Blount I've taken once or twice. And Matt Forte. I mean, Matt Forte, you know, 11th, 12th, 13th round, I've seen Matt Forte. And, yeah, it's a risky pick, but if you need a running back, that's a guy that I don't mind taking some of.
Yeah, actually, what I've done on – generally, I don't like handcuffing running backs at all in these drafts or in general. But I've actually, on a couple teams, I think, gone with both Powell and Forte. And the reason being that Forte is just so cheap. You know, for a guy who could potentially be, you know, the lead back on that team and actually produce several, you know, RB1 weeks. You know, if you have Powell with him, Powell's going to get points even if Forte doesn't go down, in my opinion. You know, you've sort of built almost an RB1 between the two of them. So that's the one, that's the one exception I've been making in terms of handcuffing and backup kind of guys.
Yeah, I like it. I think that's a good idea. So, okay, earlier you mentioned the quarterback and tight end dilemma. That's exactly what I'm finding. Again, it's not like the earlier cliffs, but, it, you know, how has that changed the fact that once you get to, like, round 12, 13, 14, you're not seeing the quarterbacks and tight ends that you have in the past? How has that affected your overall draft strategy?
Yeah, so it sort of caught me off guard when I, you know, one of my early drafts, I got to the 14th round and made Alex Smith my second quarterback. You know, I've been planning to take three, and I realized he was the only one I was really comfortable with left, and I ended up going with only two. So I've had to adjust. I mean, last year, I like to take three later quarterbacks, you know, sort of rounds 13, 14, 15 or 12, 13, 14. And at least early on here, I'm going with one of the earlier guys. Like, I love Cam Newton when he falls, you know, 8th or 9th round. Guys like Breeze. I'm not reaching for Rodgers. I usually won't take one of the first two quarterbacks off the board. But I want to get one of those sort of single-digit round guys, and then maybe only one guy from round 11 or 12, because I just know I'm not finding the kind of guys I like later, which is definitely an adjustment from last year, where, you know, I would be happy to go into a draft, you know, planning to take Mariota, Dalton, and Matt Ryan, right? And they were all sort of, you know, later. Not super late, but, you know, they're in the teens, and it's just not there this year. And you really have to, you can't bank on it being there for you.
Yeah. You nailed again, you know, great minds. I normally don't own, you know, more than 30-35% of anybody, but I'll take pretty much as much Cam Newton as you want to give me in the 8th round. A guy who scored 400 points the year before, and everything went right for that team that year, and everything seemed to go wrong last year. I think it's pretty safe to say that I think that he's going to not be as bad as he was last year and not as good as he was the year before, but there's a lot of room for growth there. And the other thing that I'm doing is, I'm not finding a lot of wide receivers or running backs I love in the, you know, 7th, 8th, 9th round and 10th. I'm walking out of there with, you know, Cam a lot of drafts and then two tight ends. I'll take like Ertz and then follow that up. Kyle Rudolph's available a lot of times, late 9th, early 10th. And then I've kind of now I don't feel like I can take two quarterbacks and two tight ends early. but I feel like I've got one really good quarterback, two tight ends. I don't need to worry about tight end again. And then I can just, you know, mix up my mediocre quarterbacks a little bit later. Or I'll take two quarterbacks, 10th and 11th, like the Mariota types. What are your thoughts on that? And, you know, any favorite tight ends that you have?
Yeah, so I'm going back to Delanie Walker again. I like his price. I've been getting him, I think, so is around the seventh round. It's around the area you were saying.
I've taken him once or twice.
Yeah, so he's a favorite of mine. I think he gets enough volume. And, you know, you can pair him with somebody else just to get, you know, a couple rounds later, three rounds later, and you'll have enough upside there. I do like some of the wide receivers in that range. One guy I've mentioned on other podcasts, Deshaun Jackson, is an early seventh round kind of guy. He's probably going to creep up a little bit, but Cam Meredith is in that range. And then one guy I almost don't even want to talk about because I love his price so much is Jeremy Maclin in the, you know, the eighth and ninth rounds. I think he's just getting completely overlooked. You know, Tyreek Hill has taken a lot of the luster off of him maybe, but you know, Maclin was hurt last year and he really, he's not the best player in the world, but ninth round, he's severely undervalued, I think. A couple other guys I like, Kenny Britt. You know, I don't love his landing spot in Cleveland, but again, you know, eighth, ninth round, that seems like the right price for me. Also, Adam Thielen, I've noticed I've been taking a lot in that range.
Well, I definitely end up with a wide receiver or two in the range. I probably misspoke a little bit, you know, because you're talking 7, 8, 9, 10, four rounds. And you name some of the guys that I like as well. Obviously, Deshaun Jackson is like Mr. Best Ball for all the reasons you mentioned in your last pod. One other or two other names I'll throw out there is Rishard Matthews. I really feel like he took a step forward and that he has something going with Mariota. An ADP right now of about 85. He's a guy I like right there with Cam Meredith. And Willie Snead is another one who also I like a lot. So once you do get past that Kenny Britt, that's when that thins out a little bit. You know, guys like John Brown. I like John Brown. I think he's going to bounce back. But, you know, with concussions, ninth round, Breshad Perriman is there, who I think actually has a chance to be good. But then there's a little bit of a drop off there. But yeah, you named some really good guys. I'm glad you did that. And that leads me to a bigger overall question because we've talked about tight end strategy and quarterback strategy and running back strategy. With so many peaks and valleys at the other positions, how has this affected your overall wide receiver strategy?
Yeah, so it's basically I tend to just fill in the gaps at wide receiver, right? So, like you said, we've identified some of these cliffs at other positions, and there are definitely some drop-offs at wide receiver, but it tends to be more level, I think, in terms of, you know, there's the big three guys at the very beginning, but then it sort of trails off relatively evenly as you go deeper into the draft. I don't see as many tiers, so what I want to do is I want to hit the right tier breaks at the other positions where, you know, we've identified, you know, running backs in the first few rounds, you know, tight ends and quarterbacks before that late or early teens sort of drop off. That means I'm filling in the gaps with wide receivers. So I'm taking a lot of them in between rounds 4 and 8. And I'm taking a lot of the later wide receivers, you know, in the teens before I take my defenses at the end. So it's really driven by what's going on at those other positions.
And that's exactly what I'm finding. Again, I remember, and I don't remember if it was you or the person you were potting with talked about how hard it is to hit on late running backs versus late wide receivers. I'm finding a lot of guys that I can choose from in, you know, starting in the 10th, 11th round. In those areas where the quarterbacks and the tight ends, there's no one I really love, I am finding wide receivers that I feel pretty good about, guys like Will Fuller. I'll throw out, I think I have him in almost every draft so far. Pierre Garçon has an ADP of 148, and that was pretty much driven because people didn't know where he was going to end up. I expect his ADP to start rising. Marquise Lee, even Tavon Austin, but another guy that I two guys who are, you know, true number two receivers, Alan Hearns at a 171 ADP, Mohamed Sanu at 182. Any thoughts on those guys, and are there anyone that you think I missed in that area that are kind of interesting?
Yeah, so I like Sanu. I think, it's really the price. He's very, very cheap. And I don't think, you know, their offense is going in, you know, into the dumpster there. I agree with you. There will probably be some regression because they were just so good last year. But I've got a few shares of him. I like Tavon Austin late. You know, I'm getting him, you know, 14, 15, 16, 17th round sometimes I see him. You know, he's not my favorite guy, but he with the gadget plays that he does, and he's on the field a lot, he'll have, you know, the occasional big week. And that's really all I'm looking for, you know, that late in the draft. So he's a guy I've had my eye on. I definitely agreed with you on some of those names. I think he's been creeping up, but still, you know, sort of 12th, 13th round range. I like Mike Wallace. And, you know, he's still, I don't
that's
think people realize it. He's still the wide receiver one there. So I'm not sure that that's really getting appreciated. In terms of Hearns, I'm not big on Hearns, because you also mentioned Marquise Lee. I think it's, you know, they're not a great offense. Bortles not, obviously just not very good. And it's a little too crowded for me, I think, to be buying Hearns.
Okay. Fair enough. Has the opening of free agency cleared up much for you? I know I was expecting a little bit more information. I still have almost as many questions as I did going in, and it's mainly because we really haven't seen a lot of the running backs on the market sign yet.
Yeah, it really still so many question marks at running back. The one thing I mentioned was knowing for sure that Woodhead would not be in San Diego, has me bumping Melvin Gordon up a little bit. But, you know, we're still waiting on Jamal Charles, Adrian Peterson, and then, you know, a host of other guys. That, we just, especially without the draft having happened, we don't know what's going to be going on in their backfields. And I'm mostly just staying away from it. I've been thinking I need to get some Charles and Peterson exposure before they sign somewhere, because they'll almost surely go up in ADP. But, you know, it like you said, it really hasn't cleared much up for me.
I definitely have some Peterson shares. I feel like, you know, boy, I would love for him to end up in Seattle or anywhere where they're at least going to put a quarterback behind center and give him the ball behind a fullback. You know, teams that are used to running power. I think that I still think, you know, if I'm not saying this the way I want to, if anyone on the Vikings had run good last year, I wouldn't be high on Peterson. But no one ran good on that team. The offensive line, I think, was to blame. He didn't play much before he got hurt. So I like that call out, especially when I start with and I come out of the first 5-6 rounds with not enough, you know, running backs that I want. Last subject as it relates to this year in the draft, how much time do you spend at this point studying rookies, and what are your thoughts on the rookies this year?
Well, my answer to the first part is almost no time studying the rookies, which, you know, also answers the second question, that I don't have a whole lot of thoughts about them. I've noticed they, you know, they tend to go up in ADP a little bit after the draft. So I'm trying to get a little bit of exposure to them in these drafts, but I don't have any really favorite guys. And I've been avoiding, you know, the first couple of running backs. That would be Cook and McCaffrey so far in these drafts. I think they're a little over. And Fournette, yes. I think they're going a little too early because of, you know, sort of Zeke fever, carrying over from last year. It's going to take a perfect landing spot for them and a perfect season for them to pay off their prices. And I'm just going to sit back and wait and see on those. If I miss out on them, I think it's okay. I can put together enough good teams anyway. So, I'm just not a college tape guy or anything like that. So I pick my spots.
Yeah. I have a little bit of Cook and I think one McCaffrey. And like I mentioned, Mixon, you know, and again, I'm a value guy. And when I hear, you know, people worried that he might not make it in the league, they didn't invite him to the combine. You know, again, I'm not going to go crazy, but the fifth, sixth round for a guy like that if he didn't have that incident, he'd probably be the number one running back on a lot of guys' boards. I think that that's a chance I'm willing to take. And in general, I agree with most of your thoughts on rookies. It's not my strength, and I think that with the rookie last year having such a good year, I do think it's a little bit of a fever, as you mentioned. So what's next for Mike Beers? Obviously you kind of had a big hit last year with hyperfragility. Is there anything that you're working on that you could kind of give us a hint about that you might unleash on a unwary public for 2017?
I don't think there's anything too exciting yet, but what I've been working on recently is trying to quantify something I mentioned on a couple of podcasts earlier this year, the idea of draft capital, so how much you've invested in a position throughout the draft, the idea being earlier picks, first round pick is worth, so much draft capital, and a fifth round pick is worth less, and so on. And looking at roster optimization from that angle, instead of just the number of running backs or the number of wide receivers, because, a couple of years ago when I first got into this, I saw things looking at what was the best roster construction the previous year or simulations that came out saying this is the way to build a roster. And I just asked the question to people, well, what if I start with three wide receivers? Is that still the best option? Or what if I start with three running backs? And nobody really had the answer. So I'm trying to put some numbers to that, and hopefully something interesting will come out of it.
Yeah, that does sound very interesting. I wish you the best with that, with your MFL 10s. And I really appreciate you coming on the show. I've actually got two people who look like they called in. Hold on a second. Hello?
Oh, hello?
Hello? Who's this?
Hello. This is Ken Kniff from Connecticut.
Yes.
I'm calling about Mike Beers. Oh, hi, Mike.
Hey, Ken, yes. This is the first. I've never had anyone come into the show. I didn't even notice you were there. And I got one other guy on. Hold on. We're gonna have some fun with this and walk out. Let's see who else is on the line. Hello?
Hello.
Who's this?
Hello, this is Aaron H.
Oh, hey, how you doing?
Good. I had a question for Mr. Beers.
Okay. Well, we're going to let Ken throw his question out, and then we're going to let you throw yours out. Ken, give it a shot.
Sounds great.
Well, I was wondering if your medical charts came back clean.
Can I answer that, Mike?
Yeah. Okay.
The answer is, of course, he's 31 years old, and he's actually tracking how many penile injections you're going to need.
Only at least three.
I would say at least three. And in fact, hold on, I've always wanted to do this to a caller. I hope you don't mind. All right, so Ken's gone, and next up is, what did you say your name was again? I'm sorry, something H?
My name is Aaron H.
Yeah, hey, how you doing? You tweeted at us, too. Go ahead, ask your question.
Yeah, I have a question for Mr. Beers. I just noticed lately a couple drafts you were doing weren't drafting any defenses. I was just wondering if you picked that up from me or if that's the new thing this year or something.
I told you weren't going to live that down, Mike.
Yeah, you know, it's a fair question, and it's what happens when you oversleep, and then oversleep again, and then oversleep again. But you know, it could work. You know, Joe Pano, who's one of the guys I follow on Twitter, won with one defense in a listener league last year. So I'm just trying to take it a step further.
Yeah, do you have another question for Mike?
I was just
It can be another funny one. Go for it.
I don't really have anything too funny. I was just wondering, how long is it usually? How many hours a day do you spend plugging shit into your laptop?
It's actually pretty quick to plug all the cords in. You know, there's the mouse and there's the charger. So, you know, it's pretty quick.
But he does ask a good question. How many hours a day about do you spend on this kind of thing?
It depends on the day, but you know, not more than a couple hours. Unless I'm really digging into a project, then I might spend, you know, 3 or 4 hours looking at it. In terms of making picks and doing drafts, though, that's all very quick. I do it from my phone. You know, I get the text notifications, and I'll just pop the pick in pretty quickly.
So, Alan, do you do a lot of MFL-10s yourself?
Aaron,
sorry.
Yeah, probably about 60 or 70.
That's a pretty good amount. Well, you can definitely follow up with Mike some more on Twitter. I'm going to let you go. Thank you very much for your call.
Thank you.
Well, Mike, that was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
You guys who called in wanting to give you crap. But, hey, we handled it, and hopefully we weren't too rough on Kenny. Kenny's a friend of yours, I assume.
Well, we've never met, but I did recognize the name.
Gotcha. Do you think I blew him up appropriately?
I think we did all right.
All right, good. Well, hey, I really appreciate you coming on the podcast. Anytime you want to come back, just let me know. Any final thoughts before we head out with the song?
No, I just want to say thank you for having me. This has been fun. I love talking MFL-10s and football in general. So, you know, anybody listening, hit me up on Twitter. It's again, Beerswater. And yeah, I had a great time. Thank you. Good luck to everybody.
I did as well. Thanks to everyone who listened. You know, fantasy is important, but we don't want to get lost in a world of fantasy. But I'm going to help you get lost in a world of fantasy from Triumph back in the 80s, some more old guy rock. Thanks for listening. Have a nice night.